Money Radio. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us. Pleasure to welcome Lawrence Kotlikoff. He is a professor of economics at Boston University, a fellow of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, and an author, several books to his credit now. The most recent is The Clash of Generations, Saving Ourselves, Our Kids, and Our Economy. Mr. Kotlikoff, thank you so much for joining us.
Great pleasure. Nice to be with you.
This is a follow-up to The Coming Generational Storm, which is a book you wrote in 2004.
Yeah, and unfortunately, things have gotten much worse. We are systematically taking from our kids and giving to ourselves through a variety of different fiscal systems. And this has been a six-decade-long policy conducted by every administration and every Congress. And it's leading to an astronomical set of bills that are being left for our kids, almost all of which are not on the books because we have been keeping them off the books in accounting that would make Enron blush. We've been engaging in all kinds of off-the-books borrowing. And an example of that is, you know, the obligation the government has to pay me my own Social Security benefits when I start collecting them. Those are real IOUs. They're not included in, as part of the official debt, but in many ways they're more likely to be paid to me than if I were holding the Treasury bonds, because the interest in principal and Treasury bonds can be eliminated in real terms via the inflation. It can be watered down via price increases associated with the government printing so much money, which it's been doing, whereas the Social Security benefits are inflation indexed. They're protected against inflation, and they're also protected by a huge army of elderly AARP members, American Association of Retired People members. It's the largest lobby group, most powerful lobby group in Washington, and they're not going to let the benefits be cut for current retirees, so or near-term retirees. So here you have just one example of an enormous liability, a $23 trillion debt, which is not on the books. The official debt in the hands of the public is $13 trillion. If we added the debt to Social Security, we'd be up to 13 plus 23, it's $36 trillion. You know, we triple the debt in 2 seconds. So we're using phony bookkeeping, and have been for decades, to obscure what's going on. And that's what The Clash of Generation is in large part about. It's about the fact that we have right now a $210 trillion fiscal gap separating. So it's not $13 trillion, it's not $23 trillion, it's not $36 trillion. We're talking $210 trillion separating all of the government's spending commitments, valued in the present, valued as today, less all the taxes available to pay for those spending commitments as projected by the Congressional Budget Office. So the numbers I'm using to make the $210 trillion fiscal gap are coming straight out of the Congressional Budget Office's July release of what's called the alternative fiscal scenario. And this is a 10.5% of GDP bill every year from now till the end of time. Basically, we need to come up with an extra 10.5% of GDP of every dollar being produced of output in order to pay to make good on these government spending commitments above and beyond what taxes we have to cover the obligation. So we're talking really about a required 58% immediate and permanent hike in all federal income taxes to come up with 10.5% of GDP on an ongoing basis. So think about, you know, raising taxes by 58% immediately and permanently. That's something no politician's, you know, remotely whispering, but that's really what's needed to cover all the spending that we have coming due. So let me take a pause there and see if you can digest that.
Yeah, I can digest it. I just don't know if it quite adds up. I mean, you've come up with an alternative fiscal analysis here that is based upon some numbers that really the government isn't even looking at, and it gets down to a matter of labeling, fiscal language, if you will. And so far, nobody's looking at the same numbers that you're looking at. $212 trillion sounds pretty strong, sounds pretty sensational, but nobody else is coming up with those numbers.
Well, economists are looking at these numbers. It's actually $210 trillion. Economists, if you go, there's a website called theinformact.org. So it's T-H-E inform.org. And if you go there, you will see that over 1,200 economists, including 17 Nobel Prize winners in economics, almost all the American economists who've won the Nobel Prize in economics, have endorsed the INFORM Act. What does the INFORM Act say? It's a bipartisan bill introduced by Senators Kaine and Thune to require the Congressional Budget Office and the Office of Management and Budget and the General Accountability Office to do fiscal gap accounting, this accounting to produce the $210 trillion. So it shouldn't be that I, as an academic, you know, speak to, you know, write about this, and but we should have the government actually reporting the true indebtedness of the country. And you have the entire economics profession endorsing this bill. So you've got people from every
top. Not the entire economics profession.
Well, I would say with a couple exceptions, you know, Paul Krugman did not endorse it. Art Laffer did not endorse it. You got people on the extreme left and right of economic thinking who have not endorsed it. But if you look at this list of endorsers, you've got a who's who of economists. You also have people from the left and the right. You've got Glenn Hubbard, who was the head of the Council of Economic Advisors under Bush 2. You also have Jeff Sachs, who's a noted pretty left-of-center economist, but also fiscally very conservative.
Well, here's the basic problem. Here's the basic problem. If we take these numbers as you present them, we should just close up shop right now. We're broke.
We're definitely broke, and there are ways to fix things, and I have proposed how to do that at another website called www.thepurpleplans.org, thepurpleplans.org, which is a set of very simple postcard-length proposals, which have also been endorsed by a lot of economists to fix the healthcare system fundamentally, to fix the Social Security system, to fix the tax system, to fix the banking system, to fix our environmental policy.
And in the book, you include some of these purple plans. You basically break it out into three sections of the book. You've got the fiscal analysis, policy recommendations, what you call purple plans. There's also some financial planning in there, more for individuals, I would say. The fiscal analysis says that we're $210 trillion, or whatever the number happens to be, forecasting out into the future, that Social Security is essentially a Ponzi scheme, and yet the Social Security Administration says, no, we're good till about 2042. The CBO says probably good till about 2052, and then we'll see.
Yeah. Well, so what the CBO and OMB and the government, well, with Social Security has two calculations in its trustees report. One is the infinite horizon fiscal gap. The other is a 75-year fiscal gap. So what the economics profession is saying based on economic theory is that you cannot just look at 75 years or 20 years or 10 years. You have to look at over the entire infinite horizon to form a number, of a measure of the fiscal indebtedness of the country that's independent of how you choose your language, whether you call money that you take from young people borrowing or taxes, and whether you call the payment, the promises that you make to them, repayment in the future, repayment principal plus interest or transfer payments. So we've used words to keep almost all of our debt indebtedness off the books. And the only measure that's invariant to the choice of labels is the infinite horizon fiscal gap. So you've got some people are just looking at the deficit and the debt, the official debt. Some people are looking at finite horizon fiscal gaps. Some people are looking at infinite horizon fiscal gaps. Economic theory is absolutely clear that the infinite horizon fiscal gap is the only thing to look at. That's what's producing the $210 trillion. That's what the economists as a profession, economics as a profession, yes, there are people on the extremes who haven't endorsed this, but as a profession.
But no, if we look at it as that is the only way to look at it, then we've closed our doors already, when in fact the economy is a dynamic economy. It changes.
Yeah,
it
responds. With all due respect, the dynamics are incorporated in these projections because the CBO is projecting the economy's performance into the future. So it's not that the only thing that really So the projections of the fiscal gap incorporate what the CBO thinks the economy, how the economy will perform. Now, if you're suggesting that we could spend more money and make the fiscal gap even You know, some people think we can spend more money and that it will pay for itself. We don't have to raise taxes. The economy will expand so much as to pay for itself. There's people like Paul Krugman. Then you've got people like Art Laffer who think we can cut taxes, maybe even to zero, and the economy will expand so much that we'll get more tax revenue, and that will pay for the tax cuts. That's really voodoo economics, black magic economics. The core of the economics profession, which are represented at theinformact.org, I mean, this is a who's who of economists, of top academic economists. We've got George Shultz endorsed this bill, David Stockman, Michael Boskin. We've got former very top officials in the government, former heads
so
of the
So you think
office
there's no hope for Social Security? It's going to crash. It's just a matter of when, and that's all there is.
Well, I think it has to be. Yeah, I think there's very terrible ways we can go through this problem, or there's much better ways, and the purple plans are solutions, but we have to have radical reforms. Yes, I think there's no way out of this. We are in far worse shape than Detroit as a country. I mean, far worse. We're probably in worse shape than Greece at this point. It's not well known, but it's known to economists. And you don't get 17 Nobel Prize winners. You may think I'm crazy talking about a $210 trillion fiscal gap, saying we need a 58% tax hike, but it's right there in the Congressional Budget Office's projections and their Excel spreadsheet. It's not my projections, it's theirs. And you've got the entire profession, I mean, yes, without some extremes.
Well, look, there are also different projections that don't match up to that. It's a matter of which type of labeling, which type of fiscal language you wish to refer to.
No, but economics, no, but let me be clear. Just like in physics, time and distance are not well-defined because of, theory of relativity tells us that these are not independent of how you, what your frame of reference, how you're moving through space and what direction, you get a different measure of time and distance.
And government debt so and deficit are also not well-defined in economics.
Yeah, but the fiscal gap is, because the fiscal gap is just like time. Space-time is well-defined, and I'm not a physicist, so I'm not pretending to really know what I'm talking about here. But my understanding is that there are concepts in physics that are fundamental, that can be measured, and that they're not up for grabs. They're not a function of your words. The fiscal gap over the infinite horizon has that property. The theory shows that no matter what labeling convention you use, as long as you put everything on the books, no matter how far off into the future you present value them, you will get a number that's independent of the labeling choice. Whereas if you look at any finite horizon measure, you won't. So this is why you got so many economists endorsing it, because it's the backbone of our theory of public finance. It's what's called the intertemporal budget constraint. It's in every single mathematical model.
But here's the problem. The problem. If labeling can result in any number from positive to negative infinity, what makes your number accurate?
It cannot. No. The fiscal gap over the infinite horizon will always be the same no matter what choice of labels you use.
No, of course
not. So labeling, I'll show you that. What does depend on the labeling are other measures. But this measure that I'm using that's producing the $210 trillion does not produce it. If you were right on the theory, I would agree that I was just talking nonsense, that my set of words would produce one $210 trillion number, your set of words would produce another set of numbers, but it's not the case. If you use it for any consistent labeling convention, you'll still get the same infinite horizon fiscal gap. So that's why economists from Harvard, MIT, Stanford, Yale, Princeton, University of Chicago, you name it, have endorsed this analysis at theinformact.org.
Clearly, if that's the case, though, we shut down the doors today because we are $211 trillion in debt, and we can not dig our way out of that. It's impossible. But that's not the case.
Things.
There are various ways to do it. And clearly those numbers can change. Going out into infinity, you can't go out into infinity. You can't do it.
Well, you're forgetting one thing. We're present valuing. The theory says you want to take the value in the present.
Based upon assumptions, and those assumptions
are subject to change. Yeah,
and then
that's why you do the fiscal gap analysis all that's on an ongoing basis. And if you do it in the U.S., you see that it's getting worse and worse and worse. We're not moving in the right direction to get that down to zero.
Hang on. Yeah. Time break. We have to take a break for time.
Okay.
We'll come back. We'll take a look at some policy recommendations in The Clash of Generations by Lawrence Kotlikoff. Money Radio. Thank you for joining us. We're talking with Lawrence Kotlikoff. He is the author of The Clash of Generations. The basic idea here is that there is some $211 trillion in a fiscal gap. The United States is bankrupt. We are broke. It's an intergenerational situation. The older generation is receiving the benefits. The younger generation is having to pay for it. And at some point or another, the younger generation will rise up and say, we don't want that anymore. Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. Medicare can't pay for itself. And so what are the recommendations to deal with some of these issues? I thought it was interesting. One of the first recommendations out of all this tended to kind of veer off a little bit and dealt with banking.
Well, I think we need to have a safe banking system. And what we now have is a system where there's two big problems. I wrote a book called Jimmy Stewart is Dead, which, again, if people go to my website, which is kotlikoff.net, they can see everything I've written. And Jimmy Stewart has said, I point out that, look, there's leverage. The banks are borrowing money and then investing it in things that they don't tell us about. So there's opacity. And those two things are putting us at risk, because if you don't know what's being done with your money, then at the slightest sign of fraud, you want to run on the bank and get your money out. And that's what happened in 2008.
How is this different from reinstating Glass-Steagall?
Very different, because what I'm proposing is that the entire financial intermediation system, all the financial corporations, whether they call themselves banks or investment banks or commercial banks or credit unions or insurance companies, whatever they want to call themselves, as long as they're financial intermediaries, what they have to do is operate as 100% equity finance mutual funds. So therefore, they can't be borrowing a penny. They just have to take the money in, sell shares in exchange for the money, and then they have to invest it in the things they say that the mutual fund's going to be investing in, and they have to disclose online what it is they're investing in. So there has to be full disclosure. The government would actually monitor the investments and report online, disclose online, what it is that this mutual fund was actually holding. So take a mortgage, for example. Right now, banks are borrowing money, and then they lend it out to people to buy homes. Now, what happened under a limited-purpose banking, which I discussed again and Jimmy Stewart said, is that people would put money into a mutual fund. They would get back shares of the mutual fund. The mutual fund, it would be a mortgage mutual fund in this case, and they would the people running that fund would take the money and buy mortgages, and those mortgages would be disclosed online by the government, by what I call the Federal Financial Authority, and then we would have a system where you would have financing of mortgages, you would have disclosure, people would know what they're investing in, but there would be no possibility of running on this mutual fund, because if the mortgages did poorly, if we had a recession and some people weren't able to pay back their mortgage, the shares to the mutual fund would drop in value, but the mutual fund itself would not go out of business. So the mutual fund becomes like a bank with 100% equity. There's no debt. Mm-hmm. It's not borrowing money. So that whole structure can be done in every context here, including marketing derivatives, CDSs, which are credit default swaps. And this book has been endorsed by a large number of Nobel laureates and other prominent people. Mervyn King is the former head of the Bank of England, endorsed the book. And so I'm not really, you know, I sound like I'm touting my own horn here or whatever, or trumpeting myself or whatever. My ego is not involved here. I'm trying to help the country, as crazy as that may sound. Well, I really care about keeping it safe, and this is the way to do it.
And there may be some different views on the fiscal analysis. You do bring up some interesting ideas, though, throughout the book, and it's an interesting way to get discussion going. Some of the policy recommendations are really quite interesting, whether any of them would fly or not. And I was very impressed that one of the first recommendations, as I say, dealt with cleaning up the banking system, which I think would go a long way towards moving forward. And then you do some awfully good financial planning in the book as well. The book is called The Clash of Generations. To find out more, visit kotlikoff.net. That's KOTLIKOFF. There's also another website, esplanner.com, and maximizemysocialsecurity.com, I believe.
.com, yeah. And those are two sites that can help people with their own personal financial issues at those two sites.
The Clash of Generations, that's the new book. Lawrence Kotlikoff, our guest today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.